This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 244 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And just so you know, I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Evidently, there was some confusion, Isaac, last week on where I live. And if you do think, if you've done this for as many years as we've done this and you suddenly move, you get confused. But we got a good show tonight, don't we, Max?
Yes, we do. Some interesting stories, kind of some military stories, which we tend to sort of shy away from, but there's some interesting things going on there.
Yeah, well, that was me. That seemed to be the news of the week was it was military, and I kept going, this is interesting, but most people don't want to deal with military stuff, but I was a little selfish, but very interesting stuff. So I guess we should get started. Well, our first story comes from SUAS News, which is My Defense launches the Wingman 103, wearable drone detection for special operations forces. I thought this was interesting. We do talk about this not frequently, but we do talk about anti-drone devices. This is tech from a Dutch company. And of course, being Dutch, I'm proud of that. And talking about wearable tech that you can find the drones spying on you.
We have talked about anti-drone, or maybe more to the point here, drone detection technology, things like applications for the Boston Marathon, other events like that. And we've seen a variety of different products, but this is the first time I've run across something that's wearable. My Defense, this company, their vision statement, I kind of like this, is to protect those who protect us. And they say their mission is to deliver products within electronic warfare by extensive research and development in the field of mission-critical RF equipment. So they have this Wingman series of platforms, and this Wingman is kind of a smallish device that you actually wear on your body.
Like a backpack outside of your clothes, and basically it scans for UAV control and video signals, radio frequencies. Acts as an early warning device against commercial drones, and is standalone or connected to a peripheral device other than to other equipment. And it's got pretty good range for something small. I don't think we've talked about something that's man-portable like this before. We've talked about buildings and protecting that way, but 1 to 2 kilometers is pretty good for a man-portable device.
Yeah, certainly. When you think about what you have to carry besides the receiver and the electronics associated with signal detection and all, it's going to require batteries, it's going to require an antenna. So this range, this 1 to 2 kilometers, is pretty impressive. Now, they also sell these devices, these Wingman devices, for law enforcement and applications such as that. But the 103 is the one that's designed for special operations forces. But again, interesting, I'm sure that this is an application that a lot of folks are going to be interested in. Stationary detection is great, but or something that you mount in a truck or something like that. But if you can put these kinds of drone detection devices right on the warfighter, the soldier, that seems like a great application.
Or the police monitoring a public event or something like that, they sort of become innocuous and you can't really detect them. So it's kind of an interesting offshoot of, you know, we've talked about this and my degree in military history has always been, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. This is kind of neat that we've gotten into a man-portable environment now that, so public events and beyond special forces. So the next story, we'll move on, was very interesting. And I personally am not going to take a stand on this, but it's the use of drones in the last week in the conflict over Gaza and the Israeli border. Drones were being used by the media as well as the military, as well as on both sides of the fence. One of the unique applications was they were using the Israeli defense forces were using drones to drop tear gas on the protesters. I thought that was an interesting application.
Maybe that's offensive use, I guess, but there was also some defensive use of drones by the Israelis. It seems that those protesting were using what they termed incendiary kites. I guess these were kites that carried some kind of flaming object or something.
Well, the kites were actually lit.
They were on fire, right?
The kites were actually, they would light the tails. And if you've ever seen a Japanese lantern, the heat lifts the kite up. And as they would land, they would catch fire to the ground as they would come crashing down. So in a poor man's unguided missile, you would say, but the Israelis were using drones to knock these kites down and to intercept them as well as monitor them.
Right. And in this article that we have in The Drive, they say that the Israeli Defense Forces actually called on some local drone racers. And their idea was to, intercept these incendiary kites, even snag them with hooks, fishing hooks, I guess, in order to bring them down. And the article has a video that shows an Israeli drone that has snagged one of these kites to sort of document what they're doing. And you'll be able to find that in the show notes. I guess the big takeaway for me, David, when we look back at these first two stories, is that drones are, it seems, increasingly being used in conflicts of various sorts, sometimes offensively, sometimes defensively. So again, while David, while you and I are not hugely enthusiastic about drones being used in the military for purposes like that, it is a big part of what drones are being used for these days. So for that reason, I guess it's important for us to at least mention some of the things that are going on.
And I'll be honest, Max, one of the things that interested me most was the types of drones being used. When we started, we talked about military drones, and we would be talking about Predators and Reapers and large military drones. In this case, in this conflict over Gaza, it's racing drones and hexacopters and small, the civilian commercial drones that we've come to, like DJI Phantoms, et cetera, are now being converted into weapons. So we sort of come full circle from large military weapons to the military beginning to optimize the prosumer or consumer drones that have been on the market for so long. So, but let's move on to happier thoughts. What do you think?
Yes, happy and small, very, very small.
Oh, so the buzz for this story wasn't good enough for you?
What do we got here?
I thought it was a honey of a story, personally.
Oh my gosh. This is about, if you haven't figured it out yet, this is about robotic bees.
Max reminded me in my show notes that we talked about this in March, which is in episode 216. We talked about RoboBees from Harvard University, these 175 milligram flapping wing robots. But what I really found interesting, even though I sort of vaguely remembered this, was this story basically says robotic bees are a real thing, and the company funding them might surprise you. I have to admit, the company funding this project really did surprise me. What did you think, Max?
When I saw the headline, I never would have guessed who the company was, which turns out to be Walmart of all companies. Now, you know, when we talk about bees, robo bees, pollinating bees, this is really an important topic because bees play such a critical role in the world from an environmental standpoint, but even closer to home, if there is such a thing over the environment. Bees pollinate food crops, and if you want to eat, you need bees, you need a lot of bees, and you need them to be pollinating the crops. Well, bees are under attack, at least the bees that pollinate crops for us. And so while we should probably be solving that problem directly, and sort of an indirect solution is this. How about little bees, little drones that can actually perform the function of pollinating plants? And that's what this patent is all about that Walmart filed. It's for autonomous pollination drones. But David, Walmart? Gee, that's... what do they have in mind?
They sell food and lots of it. They are the number one supplier of retail and food in the United States. One of the things is they like using local food sources for their store, their supermarkets. If they don't have healthy crops to sell in their stores, they're going to lose money, and you can only sell so much shoes. You know, people need more food. The other part about this patent is there are other drone patents involved, which is pest identification, crop and health monitoring. So they're into the food sources, and you never know. You might see these little drones being sold at Walmart, you know, for in their garden section.
Yeah, farmers oftentimes rely on beekeepers for pollinating bees. I recall living next to an orchard, and each spring the owners would bring in beehives from beekeepers and strategically place those around in the orchard so that the bees could pollinate the trees, the apple trees, the peach trees, and so forth.
And then the beekeepers get the honey.
Get the honey to sell. Yeah, everybody wins.
So, I mean, bees are a good thing. So if you don't know that a lot of bees are on the endangered list, just do a Google on bees. And there's a lot of ways you can help by flowers that you can set up and stuff. This is one solution, but to be environmentally sound, we need to have bees because there's always a buzz, you know, and also without bees, we wouldn't have drones.
Well, that's true. When you think about, though, how you would develop a very tiny drone and that was autonomous, that could identify, you know, the flowers and where the pollen was so that it could land and collect and then move on to the next plant. How you pull that off is not clear to me, David. I mean, that's a really complicated problem to solve and to create some little autonomous device that would do that effectively. That's got to be quite a trick. So I can't wait to see if Walmart or Harvard University or anybody else is able to come up with something that really works in this area.
Stay tuned. We'll be back in the future with more stories about drones or queen bees. And for most people, if you haven't listened to the original episode, the word drone came from the program called the Queen Bee in Great Britain. And when an inventor in the United States, off the top of my head, I don't remember, created his doodle bug, called it a drone in spoof of the Queen Bee. So you had queen bees and drones. And therefore, we use that now. That's how we got the word drone instead of autonomous air vehicles.
And we said that in the first episode?
We did.
And you can actually remember that? Wow. I can barely remember what we talked about a month ago, David, let alone the first episode. That's pretty good.
Well, what was the first topic tonight?
Yeah.
My long-term memory's good. My short-term, not so much.
All right.
Last week, we had a big announcement from the FAA about the 10 test sites and their public and private participations. Well, a couple of companies were conspicuous by absence, and one of them was DJI. And this story comes from commercialdroneprofessional.com. DJI appeals for involvement in its first-of-its-kind UAV integration program. So DJI was really upset that they weren't included in the FAA programs last week.
Yeah, and they're looking to turn that around and get involved. Now, if you go back to December last year, 2017, when the program, the UAS integration pilot program, was being talked about and before any decisions had been made, DJI issued a press release titled DJI Seeks to Partner with State, Local, and Tribal Governments. And DJI asked or invited those governments to, quote, consider partnering with DJI as they apply to take part in the new U.S. FAA program to accelerate the safe integration of UAS into the national airspace. They wanted to contribute, play a part. Well, now we have a press release for this May. DJI welcomes new drone integration pilot programs, and DJI says they look forward to the advances in drone regulatory procedures that will be enabled by the 10 state, local, and tribal governments. They say that the FAA has said it will reach out to other applicants to help explore their ideas as well. DJI says, as the manufacturer of most personal and professional drones used in the United States, DJI stands ready to assist these programs with technology and advice, as outlined in that November press release. Now, you go back to that press release, David, and DJI lists a number of areas where they would like to be involved.
Aeroscope remote identification, the electronic license plate solution, which means that you can tell where the drones are and who belongs to the drone, which is identification. Drone equipment, they wanted to give money or equipment up to $20,000. Software, policy collaboration, and custom geofencing. What else, Max?
Educational outreach, as well as access to their user community, to DJI's user community. So, you know, I think that for obvious reasons, DJI would like to bring their resources to bear in these programs. We'll see if any of the initial 10 projects take them up on that. But I don't know if we made it clear last time, but that's not the end of it. 10 projects doesn't mean that the DOT and the FAA is done selecting projects. This is just what is hopefully an initial batch of projects. So if DJI doesn't find themselves involved in one of these 10, maybe it'll have an opportunity in some future projects. But yeah, I can really see why they'd like to be involved in this, David.
So Max, why do you think they weren't included?
You know, I thought about that a little bit, and I really didn't come to any conclusions. You know, you can take a pessimistic look at it, perhaps, and say, well, it's a Chinese company, and we want to utilize U.S. companies to a greater extent. I don't know.
I hadn't even thought of that one. My, interestingly enough, I looked at it sort of as we don't want the big bully to play in the room.
Yep, that's a possibility.
I mean, that
too,
was yeah. That was my overall, was the size and scope of what DJI is. It was sort of like they have all the resources to do everything themselves, and they were trying to spread the wealth to the other guys. So I hadn't even thought about the whole Chinese aspect, but interesting, and we'll see how The gang over there converts and becomes more active involved with these programs, because I'm sure they'll find a way to be part of it.
Yeah.
Well, where else are you going to test? John Kasich signed an executive order for autonomous vehicle testing in Ohio. And this was from AUVSI.org.
Now, this is for road-going vehicles. And according to AUVSI, this order authorizes researchers to test on the state's roadways as long as their vehicles meet certain safety requirements and are capable of complying with Ohio traffic regulations. So this is not in the air stuff. This is on the ground stuff. But, you know, autonomous vehicles are kind of autonomous vehicles. And we've talked in the past about how there's a lot of overlap between aerial and ground-based and underwater or on the surface of the water vehicles if they're autonomous. And apparently AUVSI also agrees with that perspective, because that's where we learned of this executive order.
And like you said, Max, they all sort of coalesce together. I know that Ohio was up for one of the original test sites and they weren't selected. So this is another way to bring in the economy that comes with a test site, and being able to road test autonomous vehicles is a good thing. And Ohio, unlike some of the other states where they're currently road testing vehicles, actually has four seasons. It's not like Arizona or California, Southern California. They actually get snow and ice and have a climate where they're not add new variables to autonomous vehicles. What are they doing? What does an autonomous vehicle do in a lake effect blizzard?
Yeah. Even people have trouble finding the road in those kind of conditions. An autonomous vehicle would have especially great problems navigating in that kind of weather. Executive order asks that people researching these vehicles register with this Drive Ohio initiative, and it also creates, it's voluntary, but it creates an autonomous vehicle pilot program. Maybe someday the autonomous vehicle pilot program in Ohio will include aerial autonomous vehicles, maybe, but at least for now, it's still staying on the roads.
You know, it's really funny that all of these autonomous vehicles have pilot programs. That seems to be I think people just have like the irony of that.
I guess, yeah.
Well, the next one is from UASvision.com. Naval Research Lab adds solar power to the Hybrid Tiger UAV project. Now, we talked about the Hybrid Tiger before because it talks about fuel cells. And we know how much my co-host loves fuel cells. But in this case, they're supplementing the fuel cells with solar panels.
That's right, solar cells. The Naval Research Laboratory, the NRL, is going to use Alta Devices solar technology. That's the name of the company, Alta Devices, to power this hybrid Tiger UAV. And so, the idea of the Tiger is a long endurance UAV, as in a flight time of maybe 3.5 days. And the idea here is you've got solar cells, you've got a hydrogen fuel cell, and couple that with some pretty heavy-duty autonomous soaring algorithms, and they're looking to develop an aircraft that can remain aloft for extended periods of time.
And, you know, we've talked about this as persistent satellites and for areas where you need additional coverage, et cetera. So it's kind of neat that you're making hybrids for all intents and purposes. Not necessarily gasoline and electric or something, but in this case, solar charging up and fuel cells. And of course, the sexy, I have to admit this sounded sexy, autonomous soaring algorithms. That's one of those. It's like, oh, cool, it glides.
Yeah, it's sort of an energy management issue. I think if you're looking for maximum endurance, you've got the you know, fixed or limited energy, and you want to use that efficiently. So how you fly it, the algorithms come into play there. Now, Alta Devices is known for these particularly efficient and thin solar cells, very flexible. We took a look at the Alta Devices website, and they say that in 2010, they first broke the world record for single junction solar cell efficiency. They say since then, Alta Devices has broken the world record four more times consecutively and holds the current world record at 28.8%. And then in 2016, Alta Devices broke the world record for dual junction cell efficiency, and they hold the current world record there of 31.6%. Of course, that begs the question, what's this single junction, dual junction cell efficiency thing? And I was unable to answer that question, David. So you know what you do when you have a question and you don't know the answer. Well,
you use that dubious, but most of the time useful thing, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
So multi-junction solar cells are solar cells with multiple PN junctions made of different semiconductor materials. Each material's PN junction will produce an electric current in response to different wavelengths of light. The use of multiple semiconducting materials allows the absorbance of a broader range of wavelengths, improving the cell's sunlight to electrical energy conversion efficiency. Well, that kind of makes sense. You got multiple different waves of light.
Yeah.
You got different types of cells, solar cells, to deal with those. That makes perfect sense. Even the historian gets that one.
Well, we'll have a couple of links to Alta Devices pages in our show notes. And they talk about HAL UAVs. They talk about applications in smaller unmanned aircraft. And in fact, they have an application on the Puma, the AeroVironment Puma. So I don't know if you can, well, make any effective use of these on your DJI Phantom, but on some smaller fixed-wing aircraft, you might have some serious applications here for this technology that the Alta Devices has developed.
And of course, HAL being high altitude, long endurance. So we're talking about those drones or UAVs with really long wings that are covered with photocells that can stay above the clouds where there's constant sunlight, unless they're flying where it's dark. But
that's what batteries are for, right?
That's what batteries are for. So this concludes Max Flight's cheating on fuel cells, because now he's getting excited over solar cells. So
it's cool stuff. I love this stuff. We have two videos of the week, do we, David?
Well, one's just fun, and that's a light show of 350 drones over Al Jawahara Stadium in Jeddah during the final football match of the King's Cup. I can't get enough of these drone swarms doing firework display stuff. So another one to look at. But more importantly, the coolest video I have seen in a long time. I know it's military, but you got to admit that this is cool, which is new video showing DARPA's master plan for its Gremlin drones is awesome. And this again is from Tyler at The Drive. And any drone that gets launched and recovered from a C-130, I'm going to like. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. And what the Gremlins are going to do and be capable of doing that they are illustrated in this video, it's pretty awesome. And I've showed it to some people who aren't really fans of drones, don't really care. And they were like, that's cool. You have to admit, Max, it's pretty neat.
It is, and it really lets you visualize what they're doing here, because we've talked about the Gremlin drones within the last few episodes, I think, but several times along the way. And, of course, this is a series of drones that can be released from an aircraft. They go off on their mission, and they come back and get grabbed up by the airplane, and everybody goes home. But this video, and it's animation, but It's a pretty good one, and it really lets you visualize just exactly what they're doing here or intending to do here in this DARPA Gremlins project. So, yeah, very interesting. I think I first saw this from Ken in our Slack team. So thanks, Ken, for pointing this out.
And like Ken, you can join our Slack team by sending us an email to feedback@theUAVDigest. And you can join Ken and a bunch of other people and become part of our Slack listener team, which we can get all of this news from and these kind of stories. But thanks, Ken, for doing that and giving us an excuse of talking about the listener team. So we've got one mention from UAV Expert News, and this will be on June 1st, 2018 in Plano, Texas. And you can find it at our avgeekfest.com page. And if you don't know about our avgeekfest.com page, it's a co-branded page between Airplane Geeks and UAV Digest and events. So if you have a drone event, we'd love to add it to the list. And again, you can send that to us on feedback@theUAVDigest. But there's a Drone Day event with DJI, Sci-Fi Works, Intel, and Unique. So we'll have links to that in the show notes. And of course, check out avgeekfest.com for some aviation stuff in your local area.
That's right. And if you know of an event, something where enthusiasts or those of us who are passionate about aviation or unmanned aviation, if you're aware of anything like that, you can just visit avgeekfests.com and submit it right from that website. We hope you'll think about things in your area when you spot them and add them into the calendar. We really appreciate it. So I think that's it for this episode. We want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com, where there are show notes for every episode. And if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, they're at theuavdigest.com/244.
Now, next week, Max and I are going to take the week off. So our next episode will be in 2 weeks. It's the day before our Memorial Day weekend here in the States. And Max has got stuff to do, and I've got friends coming in from the other coast who I'm looking forward to seeing. And I want to be completely wide awake on the 25th when I go see Solo, A Star Wars Story, on opening day.
You can't keep David away from an opening like that.
No, but that doesn't mean to say that we don't love doing this for you guys. And it's a good Memorial Day weekend. It's a good time to say thank you for everyone who's passed in the service of our country here. And it's a good time to spend with family and friends. And we look forward to coming back in 2 weeks. And so with that, I'm going to say, this is David in Fort Washington, Isaac.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening. Happy Memorial Day. And we'll talk to you soon.